Our second lesson comes from the book of the prophet Daniel, the third chapter. This is the story in Daniel that doesn't have a gosh darn thing to do with Daniel, and it's probably familiar from your childhood. King Nebuchadnezzar made a golden statue whose height was 60 cubits and whose width was 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Accordingly, at this time, certain Chaldeans came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, drum, and entire musical ensemble shall fall down and worship the golden statue. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These pay no heed to you, O king. They do not serve your gods, and they do not worship the golden statue that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought in. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods, and you do not worship the golden statue that I have set up? Now, if you are ready when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, drum, and entire musical ensemble to fall down and worship the statue that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. And who is the God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to present a defense to you in this matter. If our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire and out of your hand, O king, let him deliver us. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, and we will not worship the golden statue that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was so filled with rage against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that his face was distorted. He ordered the furnace heated up 7 times more than was customary, and ordered some of the strongest guards in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to throw them into the furnace of blazing fire. So the men were bound, still wearing their tunics, their trousers, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the furnace of blazing fire. Because the king's command was urgent and the furnace was so overheated, the raging flames killed the men who lifted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound, into the furnace of blazing fire. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up quickly. He said to his counselors, "Was it not 3 men that we threw bound into the fire?" They answered the king, "True, O king." He replied, "But I see 4 men unbound walking in the middle of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the 4th has the appearance of a god." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the door of the furnace of blazing fire and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their tunics were not harmed, and not even the smell of fire came from them. Nebuchadnezzar said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. They disobeyed the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that utters blasphemy against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Do you remember this story from growing up? This was one of the ones that was in the kids' Bibles. And growing up in the South, we always knew who the 4th character in the fiery furnace was. Say it with me. Jesus. Right. That's getting ahead of the story. One of the things that happens in the church is that we tell the same stories every year. We tell the same stories over and over and over again. We tell them a lot. Part of it's because we like them. You'll notice we skip the stories we don't like as much. And part of it is because we need to hear them. So there's a piece to this story of the men in the fiery furnace. It's not the part that's cool, I'm sorry, that we actually hear repeated. This is the third time it happens in Scripture. If you go back to the days of the judges, before there were kings, Israel has problems. They lose a lot. I mean, that's the nicest way to put it, is they lose a lot of battles. And in one of the battles, the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark that holds the Ten Commandments, that has the seat for God on top of it, is captured. And it gets taken away, and it gets put like a trophy in the middle of another temple. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you watch college football, it's the old oak bucket or the Paul Bunyan's axe or whatever. You know, you got the trophy you got to take back from your rival. In this case, the trophy is the Ark of the Covenant. It's a pretty nice trophy, right? Except there's a problem, because when they come in on day two of having their beautiful golden trophy, they find the statue of their God face down on the floor. So they prop the statue back up, and okay, day three of having their nice new trophy, they find the statue on the floor and the hands have been cut off the statue. Okay, so they reaffix the hands and they stack the statue back up. And day four of their brand new trophy, they come in the morning and it's over on its face and its head has been cut off and its hands have been cut off, and they stand the statue back up and they put it back together and they send the Ark of the Covenant back to Israel. Who or what are you supposed to worship? There's the question implied in that story, right? That if you put the Ark of a Covenant in front of some other god, which one wins? Right? This golden thing that Harrison Ford worked really hard to find wins! And then it goes off to a government warehouse somewhere. It wins every time. This is the first time we hear this story. Now, we hear it again, slightly earlier. Moses is on top of a mountain. The people are at the bottom. Do you remember what the people are doing at the bottom of the mountain? They're making a golden statue. Is there a theme here yet? Have you guys figured this out yet? We do like shiny objects, and we like almost anything better than God. There's another story in the book of Esther, which comes up within 100 years of the writing of Daniel. And Esther gets in trouble. She's the queen. She wins the beauty pageant. She becomes the queen. That's the story. It's not exactly a women's lib story at the beginning. It turns into one by the end. And there's this thing where people are supposed to bow down in front of this statue. And the Jews don't do it. And Haman, who is one of the king's advisors, goes so far as to have a gallows built in the courtyard ready to start hanging Jews. And then Esther and Mordecai go to work. Are you sensing a pattern here? If we jump forward just about 2,100 years, there's a legend that comes out of Switzerland. You may have heard of William Tell, Apple. Well, the reason he gets challenged to shoot the apple off his kid's head in the legend is that he will not bow down to the new conqueror's hat, which is on a pole in the city square, and everybody who, when they pass it, is supposed to bow down. Guess what? Over 2,000 years of history, we tell this story a lot. We tell it a lot in Scripture. The question isn't about the fiery furnace part. The question is about, why do we need to hear this story so much? We are indeed, Gene, slow learners. Which is part of the reason why we need to tell the Advent story every year, and the Christmas story every year, and the Easter story every year. We are slow learners. We are very slow learners some days. When we come to this passage, while the fiery furnace is the cool part, I mean, that's the selling point, right? It's got flames. It's 7 times hotter than normal. It'll even kill you if you get close to it. I mean, raw! That's the end of the story. I mean, that's the payoff of the story. We get to that situation because you have 3 guys who are unwilling to say there is anything more powerful than God in the world. And they stick to their guns. Right? I mean, it'd be easy. You're in the room in front of Nebuchadnezzar. First of all, first thought that came to me reading this story again as an adult was, Nebuchadnezzar really didn't do good background checks on his governors. Because you would have thought this would have come up, right? But you're in there, you're in front of Nebuchadnezzar, and his face is distorted with rage, yelling at you. I would think that would be a good time to maybe reassess. Or, in the vernacular, chicken out. Right? So why don't they chicken out? Esther doesn't chicken out either. Why don't these folks chicken out? The fire gets ramped up. The men get thrown in. The men come out. They don't even smell bad. They haven't been burned. They haven't been scorched. None of their clothes are damaged. Did you catch the very end? Because this is part of it that is not in the children's Bible. The very end of the passage. Nebuchadnezzar himself says, "There is no God like the God of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego." That's a really interesting piece for 2 reasons. One is, when we read the Bible, a lot of times we call him the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Right? You know, it's a good old-fashioned Old Testament kind of reference. Never liturgically do we refer to this as the God of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. But the king gets it. What would it look like if we were able to push back enough that we could get people to realize there is no God but the God of Susie, Andrea, and Laurel? Think about that for a moment. Now, why doesn't that happen? Well, we know why that doesn't happen, right? We're highly conflict-avoidant, passive-aggressive people who will have a great conversation about what we should have said in the parking lot. So why do we need to hear this story again and again and again? We forget. This is one of those stories that helps us remember. It helps us remember who we are and who we're called to be, and frankly, what's on the line here. And we forget that pretty quickly, pretty easily. This is not the only story that happens multiple times in Scripture. We have prophets who go to starving people multiple times, and abundance rings out in the midst of scarcity. We have a repeated, really, really, really repeated dialogue between God and the people of God in the Old Testament about neglecting the widow, the orphan, and the resident alien. It happens a lot, and basically every time the people in the Old Testament get punished, it's because they mess that part of things up. So as you can tell, it happens a lot because the people in the Old Testament get punished a lot. We have recurring themes about being made new, new creations. We have lots of recurring themes about forgiveness and what we deserve and grace. We have a lot of recurring themes about God not doing it the way we would do it. Right? I mean, let's convert Nebuchadnezzar. Let's play God for a minute. I want to go convert Nebuchadnezzar. He's the king of Babylon. My people are in exile there. Let's figure out how to do this thing. Clearly, the best way to do this is to put three people in a high-stress situation, throw them in a fiery furnace, and have them come out alive. I mean, clearly, that's the best way to do this. Yeah. The burning bush thing I've done before, I've sent angels before, I've spoken to people directly before. This is how we ought to convert Nebuchadnezzar. Let's take three of my people, you know my people, they're troublesome, they're quarrelsome, they forget me easily, they run away to other gods, and let's put them in pressure situations. Your God or your life, and let's hope they come through for me. I mean, how many of you would pick three of us and say, okay,